Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, the only individual time trial in this year's Tour de France took place in Bordeaux today, with the stage result being somewhat stranger than anyone would have thought, and the final battle for yellow being closer than anyone would have thought to.
Speak for yourself, I expected Cancellara to win, so it wasn't strange at all. The fact that he was, 6 minutes faster than Andy Schleck is... it's a bit of a surprise.
I think that's what I was kind of alluding to there, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. Almost equally amazing is that... how many seconds did Bert gain in Chaingate?
Can you remember? I know exactly that figure. 39.
Yeah, and how much is he leading the Tour de France by going into the Champs-Élysées?
That would be 39.
It's a bit of a laugh, isn't it? I like that.
It's kind of those things. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that suddenly, you know, if you don't believe in God, you think maybe there is a God and he's just a big practical joker.
I got back from work and I was, as I always do, I'd nipped onto Twitter and looked at the forums. And that was actually brought up by Coramur, one of our regular posters on the forum. And I thought, that can't be right. So I went back and had a look and went, oh, it is right. That's quite cool, that.
Well, let's, before we get on to the GC and Chaingate and everything related therein, let's look at the stage result first. And you said Fabian Cancellara came in first, with Tony Martin from HTC Columbia down 17 seconds, and former world champion Bert Grabsch, also from HTC Columbia, 1:48.
Just confirmed what we've said all year. Cancellara is the best time trialist in the world. Full stop. I mean, no question. He got the best of the conditions because the GC guys were riding against a kind of a rising cross headwind. But even without that, looking at the gap he built up over them, he would have won anyway. So the strongest man won on the day, and as I've had a joy to watching a time trial bike.
Yeah, heading kind of further up the field, and yeah, it was weird how the time gaps were phenomenal, to be honest with you. Armstrong finished more than 7 minutes down. Wiggins was 3:33 down, and David Miller 4:20 down.
Yeah, and I think Miller said it was only going to get worse after him, because he clearly had the Michael Fish weather eye on and could see the weather was going to get bad. I tell you what this says to me, though. It's not about the weather. These guys are just tired after a hard, hard tour.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. It has been a phenomenal tour in terms of how much excitement it's brought to everyone, but it has looked like a difficult tour. And we talked about how brutal the Giro was this year. I don't think anyone really realised how hard a tour this actually was.
Well, we saw how brutal the Giro was because none of the Giro guys were anywhere. You know, they flattered to deceive at the start of the race. Perform well. I'd even said that, you know, I expected the worthy world champion Cadel Evans to maybe recover a bit for the Pyrenees. But as the race went on, the Giro guys just looked tireder and tireder and tireder and tireder. And when you compare it to, you know, Bert last year, for example, I came in from work and I'd got the kids to tape the time trial for me because I was working up, you know, till quite late. And I came in and I turned it on with about half an hour ago and I went, you know, what the fuck is happening here? Because yeah, Andy Schleck in the first time check had taken six seconds out of Contador?
Yeah, I mean, it got really, really close. And as you say, the early part of it, I think the lead over Schleck only, I think it was something like 3 seconds. And you're thinking, what on earth is going on here? Are we talking about 1989 all over again?
Absolutely, you know? Shades of 1989. And I tell you what this says to me. I've been not seesawing, I've had the odd doubt this race. What this says to me is clean racing. The top GC guys, as well as having the worst weather today, have had the hardest time over the previous 3 weeks. you know, they've had to work like a dog just to keep their position on the road. And, you know, coming to this, the guys that are in front of them, some of them might have got better weather, but they've had a bit of a, well, you never get an armchair riding the Tour de France, but they haven't had the ding-dong battle at the front, so they're fresher, so they can do well. The top GC guys, I mean, you might look at them finishing, you know, 40th or whatever, but they've had to fight so hard that they're tired. And just for a change, let's be blunt, what doping does is it helps you recover. And I think what we're seeing this year, and I'm really, really happy about it and really encouraged, is, you know, a Contador and a Schleck, who are at the top of their game, who are amongst the finest athletes in the world, and who are having a fair fight. And I think that just enhances the whole tour for me.
It was a very, very emotional Alberto Contador on the podium today, taking his penultimate yellow jersey for this year's tour. And I think that all you said there was played out on Bert's face today. That was a man who had to work for his yellow jersey, not only today, but across the past 3 weeks.
I really hate the UCI, by the way.
Right, okay, that's probably a given, but can we expound on that?
This whole 5 centimetres behind the centre line of the bottom bracket stuff for your saddle, you know, the nose of your saddle, which, let's be blunt, again, sorry, it's becoming, you know, all joking aside, I've got to get rid of let's be blunt.
Let's be blunt, all joking aside, I'm sure there's more.
I couldn't agree more, you know, all of those stuff, let's forget that, but essentially, to get rid of Graham O'Bree because he was an upstart Scotsman, you know, who dared to go fast. That's when this whole, you know, limiting the seat angle of your bike and having the saddle a certain distance behind started with the UCI.
Yeah.
And what it means is the time trial guys, although the pros can't go as extreme as a specialist time trialist because, you know, they're in the same road position all the year, so they've got to, you know, cater for that. What you have are guys on time trial bikes with a saddle 4 or 5 centimetres behind where it needs to be. And I'm really getting sick of Bert every 5 seconds scooting his arse backwards in his saddle. You know, his saddle should just be 4 or 5 centimetres further forward and he could just sit on it. And Schleck was the same, but Bert really annoys me. And when you saw, you know, that uncomfortable Bert on the saddle today and you compared it to, he was still doing the, you know, the arse scooting last year. You compared it to the calm Bert on a time trial bike when he won the final time trial last year. We saw an athlete who was having to work his heart out to, you know, to get a win that he wanted. And that brought back to me those fantastic pictures of Greg LeMond, you know, when he realised that Laurent Fignon had lost the tour and he leapt up just in extreme happiness and Fignon collapsed onto the road. It was that kind of emotion and it brought a real validity to the final of the race today. I mean, it's one of the finest time trials I've seen in the Tour de France in terms of excitement. Cancellara was a deserved winner, but I mean, I was shouting at the telly, I was enjoying it so much.
Yeah, definitely. Just talking about positions on the road and stuff then, I think we can all agree that Andy Schleck's time trialling ability has improved immeasurably, which is an odd thing to say given it's a time trial, but has improved somewhat over the past year, and he's a better time trialler than I think we gave him credit for, or anyone gave him credit for, given everyone was talking about the 3 minutes he had to take over Contador in the mountains.
I'm not sure he was. I'm genuinely not sure. I think he's a bit better than he was last year. And with Cancellara and your team and the wind tunnel time that, you know, the specialised spend and that sort of thing, he's going to be better. And after all, you know, he's the time trial champion of Luxembourg, which is, you know, it's a lofty title. I think we just saw a Contador who hadn't had creative recovery all race. And I think Schleck was slightly better than I expected him to be. And I think we saw the real Alberto showing the steel and the grit that I talked about the other day. You know, a true champion fighting for a race that he cared about and doing credit to the sport today.
Well, that's something that, again, that we've been talking about for the past 3 weeks and probably longer, is Alberto Contador's form. You know, that he didn't look as imperious, there's that word again, as he had done last year, even in the Dauphiné. And we were worried and we were wondering whether it was just a man who had perfected his training.
Preparation,
yes, and not in maybe in pejorative or pharmaceutical terms, but had perfected his preparation to peak, as you said, in the third week of this tour, and it never really came. We saw someone that wasn't as imperious. And of course, thoughts go back to Verbier last year. He wasn't as imperious, he wasn't as dominant, and it made for such a better race, I think.
And except for Chaingate, which I'm still slightly dodgy about. I mean, I still think that was wrong.
Let's get to that then. I mean, it's as poetic, if I can use that word, as it is to have gained 39 seconds in Chaingate and then win the Tour by 39 seconds today. There's obviously going to be a lot of questions asked about this, and it's going to continue to rumble on.
I think Contador would have still won, but I think we could have seen the closest finish since 89.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have anyway.
I suppose the question there that you got to ask, Schleck obviously attacked, and as far as we knew, Contador couldn't respond at that point when Chainsuck happened. The question is, would Contador have recovered either by the time they reached the top of the climb or indeed in the descent down?
Well, my feeling, and it's ifs and buts, but they would have finished together. In which case, we would be going into tomorrow with a dead heat. Now, that would be exciting on a procession stage.
Wouldn't it just? Andy Schleck himself, then, we talked about Bert's position on the bike and our scooting, whatever that is. It's a very, very odd turn of phrase. I think Andy Schleck needs to work more on his position. It was really, really interesting to see the camera go back and forth between the two and see how Alberto Contador was lower and had just such a more aerodynamic position than Schleck, and you could see why the second started to eke out over the latter part of the course.
See, I'm going to get my aero geek head on here.
That's why I said it.
It's really hard for tall people to get aero. Within the UCI rules. I mean, back when all the kind of really harsh rules were coming in, there was an American time trialist called Colby Pierce, who, he's a tiny wee guy, and because he's so small, and the UCI rules are completely arbitrary in terms of the reach of the front extensions and the distance behind the saddle and that, or behind the bottom bracket and that kind of thing, a small person, there were some examples actually after they outlawed the Superman position that Abree had, where a tiny person could ride a bigger bike and get into the Superman position and still fit the UCI rules. Tall people, because they've got so many levers and such long body parts to fit within the strictures that the UCI have approved, find it really hard to get as low in aero as small people. And I mean, it's just an example of how arbitrary rules are completely unfair. You know, if they're going to fit rules to bikes or to people, they should be in relation to their body dimensions, not some arbitrary rule about the amount of reach allowed in a front extension and a tri-bar.
Yeah,
and Andy Schleck's always going to struggle. You know, Contador's always going to be able to be more aero.
Well, in terms then of the improvement that we've seen, or maybe the lack of form that Alberto has had this year, obviously it's made for a much more exciting race. And Andy, of course, doesn't qualify for the Young Riders jersey next year, but how close do you see the battle being next year?
I'm actually really pleased, and my wife's really pleased that he doesn't qualify for the Young Riders jersey next year.
Where are we going with this?
Did you see his shorts?
I thought that's where we were going with this.
He finished that race with a maggot and two raisins down there. It was just nasty. Ailsa went, "That's not his willy, is it?" I went, "It might be."
Well, there's. I mean, in the vast locus of things that I thought were going to be said in today's podcast, that's probably not one of them. But could we get back to the matter in hand and as to what you think?
The matter in hand? Oh, we're going downhill here. Okay, right, let's get back on track.
Yeah, back on track then with how you think it's going to be next year between Contador and Schleck.
Given, very of course, dull, because they're both going to be in the same team.
Yeah.
Seriously, that could kill the excitement next year, because what we've got here is a kind of, Ongetiel and Poulidor or a Merckx and a Cagna thing going on, where they're actually very different riders. But given a level playing field, which, God bless them, I genuinely believe we saw, or at least a much more level playing field this year, given another year for Schleck to work in it, I couldn't call it next year, which is hugely exciting to me.
Moving on then from the yellow jersey to the green jersey, and Alessandro Petacchi kept green today, but I think he needs to finish, what, seventh or better to keep it tomorrow?
Which he's going to do. I mean, unless he's very unlucky, Thor Hushovd has suffered from the Galloway curse, where, you know, I picked him for the green jersey and he's just decided to commit suicide for that competition in the last couple of days. Having said that, you know, the pair of them finish out the points and Cav does what Cav, you know, Cav does. Any three of them could win it.
Yeah, of course, Alessandro Petacchi took the green jersey back from Thor Hushovd yesterday in the stage coming into Bordeaux, which the aforementioned Mark Cavendish won, and very, very impressively indeed.
Oh, no, I mean, whatever I think about his antics, you know, whether it's, you know, the archers at Agincourt or taking down Heinrich Häusler or whatever, that boy's got legs. And I said last year when he won Milan-San Remo, I've never seen a sprinter like him, you know, not a Cipollini. Just somebody who, with the track craft, with the positioning, with the leg speed, with the fact that he's aware of the aerodynamic position of his body during the sprint, he's the real deal on the bike. It's a shame he's such an arse off it.
Well, hopefully with maturity that'll lessen
somewhat.
No, it'll
come. I mean, yeah. That's, as we say, he's still a young lad, and I'm prepared to cut him some slack for that, because sprinting, you know, it's a daft bloke's game. They're all mental. And Cav, did you see that yesterday? He was doing some kind of strange whipping a horse thing before the finish. And
I don't think I've seen such a big gap for a long time on a traditional sprinter stage.
I mean, it was. No, he's the fastest man in the world. I mean, it was even following it by Twitter, sitting in a post van. I was impressed by the gap by the end.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, five bike lengths, something like that.
Right, it was enough.
Yeah, and interestingly, it was Alessandro Petacchi who came in third place yesterday that meant he would reclaim the green. But just going back to your point of, you know, Petacchi and Hushovd finishing absolutely nowhere on the Champs-Élysées tomorrow, and Cav taking the victory. Thor Hushovd himself went far, far too early yesterday, and I think came in something like 13th, something like that.
Into the wind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. It's what we talked about when, you know, when folk were saying Cav went too early in his first stage win, or it might have been his second. They're all blurring together now for me. You have to take account of the wind. You know, if you go early with a headwind, you're going to die and people are going to come past you. And it was a basic mistake from Hushovd.
So, yeah, I was just kind of, you know, tying that up with, we say that, you know, something incredible needs to happen tomorrow for Petacchi and Hushovd to finish outside the points for Cav to take it. But it doesn't take, you know, major mechanicals or crashes. It just takes something like that, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time, making the wrong move, and suddenly you find yourself 20 places back.
I mean, yeah, bearing, you know, accidents or acts of God, we've got three people who could win the green jersey tomorrow. And that makes for an exciting finish at the Champs-Élysées, which is, you know, it's a playground for the green jersey guys. I think Cav will really miss Renshaw tomorrow, because Renshaw is a genius at that kind of through the Plastic Concorde thing.
Yeah, yeah.
As he showed last year, and, you know, they dropped essentially the entire peloton. Mm. But, you know, Cav's got some legs going for him. It's going to be an exciting day.
Yeah, I mean, and interestingly as well, like Chaingate, we have another key event that's become a big talking point and could be a big talking point tomorrow after the stage, given how Thor Hushovd seems to feel about the race being neutralised when we were going into Spa.
No, he's quite right. I mean, I thought that was a disgrace. I said it was a disgrace at the time. But a bit like Chaingate, you could argue it's like a racing incident in F1, and we should just go, ah, well, you know, it's one of those things, let's get on with it. Because the rest of the race has been exciting enough to make up for it. And whoever wins either the green jersey or, you know, the GC tomorrow, well, Alberto Contador's going to win the GC. Whether there are questions over it or not, they're not questions that should diminish their achievement. Whoever wins green or the yellow tomorrow, in fact, all the jersey winners, they're worthy winners because they did what needed to be done out in the road.
Just before we finish up today, I wanted to mention, I know you did too, John, one of our regular listeners, the worryingly titled T-Hag,
That's not an attractive name, is it?
On Twitter and indeed on our forum, real name Katie Malkowski, and I hope I pronounced that right.
I think you actually proposed marriage, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. Well, she's playing a banjo in our Twitter Avatar, and I've proposed for less than that. Let's face it.
Damn right.
Well, Katie is doing a charity bike ride from Toronto to Montreal, and I think that's just in a couple of days' time. So I just wanted to mention it simply because, you know, it's for a good cause. Apparently, it's for people living with HIV and AIDS. So if you felt you wanted to sponsor Katie and help with a very worthwhile charity, we'll put a link on the page for today's show where you can find out more and how you can sponsor her.
Hey, it's a good enough cause that we even dug into the voluminous Velocast PayPal to donate, I think, 3 or 4 cents. So
that's much? Are you mad?
That's our profit margin for the year. Seriously, Katie, great person. It's for a good cause. Give her some money.
Well, I think that's probably all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening and staying subscribed. You can contact us by visiting our website at velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how you can donate or subscribe to the show. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider leaving a comment or review in iTunes, as this really helps other people discovering it. Well, we hope you can join us tomorrow following the mayhem that will surely ensue on the Champs-Élysées for another edition of the Velocast.